Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Anna Kempner did not want to go on that cruise. Her maternal aunt, Crystal Wright, said it plainly. Anna wasn't excited about the trip. She wasn't looking forward to a week in the Caribbean with family because the boy was going, her stepbrother, the one she wasn't comfortable around, the one she was worried about. And it wasn't just the aunt who saw the signs. Anna's ex-boyfriend, Joshua, too, said he was on FaceTime with Anna one night, said that she'd fallen asleep on camera, and he watched her stepbrother come into the room and allegedly try to get on top of her. Anna, according to two, expressed real concern about her stepbrother's behavior, not vague unease, not teenage drama, legitimate concern. And then the adults in her life put her in a stateroom with him anyway. A federal grand jury has now laid out what it believes happened in that room. Timothy Hudson, Anna Kempner's 16-year-old stepbrother, the first time we're saying his name on the air, has been indicted as an adult on charges of first-degree murder and aggravated abuse. Those charges came down from U.S. Attorney's Office of the Southern District of Florida, backed by a federal grand jury, and they describe something far worse than what anyone was led to believe in the early days of this case. Why are we saying his name on the air? Why can we talk about this in greater detail than we ever have before? Well, because the information is now available. He's no longer being charged as a juvenile. He is being charged as an adult. And that changes everything about this case. If convicted, Hudson faces a maximum penalty of life in federal prison. So, the question that sits at the center of all this, heavier now than it has ever been, is what did the adults around Anna Kempner miss? Or maybe more painfully, what did they choose not to see? This isn't about blaming people. It's about examining a situation. It's about examining the positions that life puts you in. In various scenarios, whether you're mom and dad in a blended family and you got a bunch of kids, and just because mom and dad get along swimmingly doesn't necessarily mean that the children will. This is something that if you've been in a blended family or a blended relationship as an adult after a divorce and you have kids, you may be familiar with. I think anybody who's in that situation to some degree or another understands that meshing all these different personalities isn't always the easiest thing, isn't always completely doable. And sometimes concessions have to be made to make it work. And sometimes it means maybe not putting everybody into the same cruise stateroom. They can handle it. They'll suck it up. They'll deal with it. Yeah. Or they won't. And horrible things will happen. I don't know what was said or what the agreement was. I know we've heard early reporting on this that, well, we gave Anna the option. If she didn't want to, she could go stay with Grandma and Gray. Yeah, that's great. But, you know, I know she had just turned 18, but she's still a kid. And somebody needed to be the effing adult in this situation. And none of the adults did that, in my opinion. None of the adults just said, we're not going to make you feel like an inconvenience. We're not going to make you feel like, you know, you're intruding on someone else's space. We're going to get you your own space. You deserve your own privacy. You're not going to be someone else's burden because we can't make the right decision out of the gate because we're trying to save a couple bucks. If you can't afford to go on the damn cruise and get everybody the proper places to stay. Don't go on the effing cruise. I don't know. It's pretty cut and dry to me. If you can't afford to do something that you want to do, then you just can't really do it if it's not going to work out. The two of you maybe could. Your parents, mom and dad, if you're going to cruise and find a sitter for the kids or I don't know. But if you can't afford everybody to have them spaced out where they need to be, and I'm not speaking to the Kempners here. I'm speaking to any grown-ass adult that's watching this that's going, yeah, but that's an extra however many hundred. Great, I understand that. It sucks. Traveling is expensive. Either you do it right or you don't do it. Because Anna Kempner is just one of the stories that we know about. We know about it because she died on the cruise ship. There are so many stories, and maybe this is a point where we need to do a series on, because I feel like this is an area that doesn't get enough attention yet really holds a lot of trauma and stories. I mean, there's a whole industry designed in the adult world on this very theme of stepchildren, of stepbrothers and sisters. Yeah. And people seem to find it to be their thing because there's a lot of it. And when you're dealing with developing brains and you're like, oh, and the society is like, this is normal. This is, this is how it works. You get some really bad decision-making by very bad decision-makers. It's a weird, weird space, it feels like. I just feel like it's toxic all around in so many different ways. And it's no way to make an excuse for this young man by any means. This was horrendous. This was horrible. But I do, again, I'm not here to blame the parents. I'm speaking, like I said, more so as a cautionary tale to others. These are young adults. Yes, they're your kids. And this one was 18. These are young adults. And young adults with raging hormones and bad decision-making power and aggression issues that clearly have already been demonstrated, like there was in this case, make really bad choices. Really, really bad choices. How do you avoid that? Well, I mean, aside from shipping them off to boot camp somewhere and hoping to God that that changes them. You kind of have to, you know, you have to work with them, but you also don't want to put them in positions where those bad choices are more likely to be made. Again, not blaming the parents, but I'm saying there's a speed bump or 25 that could have been put in the mix here, knowing the temperature of the room. So we continue to go through this. I'd love to get your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. So let's go back. The links, by the way, are in the description. Anna Marie Kempner was 18 years old, a senior at Temple Christian School in Titusville, Florida, a cheerleader. She loved heavy metal music, dolphins, butterflies, and the Georgia Bulldogs. Dreamed of cheering for them one day. She wanted to join the Navy. She wanted to become a canine officer. Everyone who knew her described her the same way. Bubbly, outgoing, fun, fiercely herself. Her family called her Anna Banana. She was months from graduation. She had her whole life mapped out ahead of her. In November of 2025, Anna boarded the Carnival Horizon for a six-day Caribbean cruise. The family trip included her father, Christopher Kempner, her stepmother, Sean Tell Hudson, her grandparents, Barbara and Jeffrey Kempner, her 14-year-old biological brother, Connor, her 16-year-old stepbrother, Timothy Hudson, and the family's younger children. Three staterooms, The grandparents were a couple of decks above. Christopher and Chantel took a room across the hall with the two youngest girls, and the three teenagers, Anna, Connor, and Timothy, shared a room together. Chantel Hudson testified in court that the arrangement was the kids' idea. That's great. Kids have all sorts of ideas. You're the effing adult, Chantel. I know you haven't necessarily played that role super effectively, in my opinion, and a lot of others throughout your life. But that is true. You're the effing adult. Because it's their idea doesn't mean it's a good one. That they wanted to stay together. That the three of them were like the three amigos, best friends. That's what you told yourself, Chantel. Keep telling yourself that. I will say this. The family has backed down quite. I mean, the family, honestly, shockingly, and I'll say this as a good thing, from the beginning in this case, has been pretty much on the side of justice. Once the revelations came to light, the statements that have been made publicly have been very much, well, this deserves to be prosecuted. This deserves consequences. This is not something we're going to, you know, look the other way on. I'm paraphrasing here, but good on them for that, because there's so many cases where it's no, impossible. This can't be. It was the boogeyman. I mean, I can't imagine what people are going through right now, but it is a sign of someone owning this. And I know there's a lot of criticism here, and rightfully so. And I know there's far more chapters to this story than what I'm saying right now, but that is something that we do not get or see in a lot of cases of this sort of nature. The last night Anna was seen alive, her braces had been bothering her at dinner. She told her grandmother she wasn't feeling well. I went back to the room, but she rallied. She got dressed up, came back down, sat at the casino with her grandparents, played $20. Then she went back to the stateroom, she said. Chantel testified she last saw the three teens around 7:30 that evening and went to sleep. When the ex-husband's attorney asked her whether she ever checked on the teenagers across the hall, her answer was, "I went to sleep. And I never came to breakfast the next morning." Captain Stewart then ended up finding her body under the bed in the stateroom, wrapped in a blanket, covered in life vests. The Miami-Dade medical examiner ruled the cause of death mechanical asphyxiation. A source later described it as a bar hold, an arm placed across the neck. There was bruising on her neck. The time of death was listed at 11:17 a.m. on November 7th, which, according to a source familiar with the case, aligns with approximately when the body was actually discovered. The ship docked in Miami the next day. The FBI immediately took jurisdiction because the death occurred in international waters. And the investigation began closing in fast. And as grandparents told ABC News that authorities told the family something critical. Based on security camera footage from the ship, Timothy Hudson was the only one seen going in and out of the room, going in and out of that stateroom. Connor and his 14-year-old brother was not inside during whatever happened. He was close enough to hear it, though, allegedly. According to Anna's ex-boyfriend, Joshua Tu, who spoke with the Inside Edition, Connor told him that he heard the stepbrother yelling at Anna in a harmful way, allegedly. Heard him tell her to shut the hell up. Heard banging around the room, including what Connor believed were chairs being thrown, or what he interpreted through the sound of the door. A 14-year-old boy on the other side of a door listening to his sister being attacked on a cruise ship while the adults slept. Within days of the family returning to port, both of Timothy Hudson's parents, in separate filings in an ongoing custody battle over their younger children, identified the 16-year-old as a suspect. On December 5th, 2025, a Brevard County judge said it out loud in open court. The 16-year-old child is now a suspect of the death the stepchild during the cruise. Hudson was removed from the family home in Titusville and then sent to live with relatives in Hernando County. His mother confirmed in court that he'd been admitted to a medical facility when the family returned to Port Miami. He was later released and then put into counseling. And then came the text messages. Released through the custody proceedings. That's how we learned so much about this case. And it's kind of our starting point of what is going to be a very interesting journey that we will continue to cover right here. A November 9th exchange between Chantel Hudson and Timothy's biological father, Thomas Hudson, painted a disturbing picture. Chantel wrote that she'd been able to speak to her son briefly the night before, under 2 minutes. He just keeps repeating over and over. He can't remember anything, she said. Can't remember anything. That's what the teenager allegedly told his mother after his stepsister was found asphyxiated under a bed in the room they shared. He takes medication for ADHD and insomnia. His mother confirmed in court that he hadn't taken his insomnia medication for 2 nights on the cruise, including the night before Anna's body was found. Law enforcement sources indicated alcohol may have been involved. Was it? We don't know. Keep that claim, I can't remember anything, in your mind, because a federal grand jury just came back and said what allegedly happened in that stateroom was intentional. First-degree murder requires proof of intent, not impulse, not accident, intent. That's a direct collision with any defense built around memory loss. And the charges go further than anyone expected. 4 months, two competing narratives about the family circled this case. On one side, the adults closest to the household, Chantel Hudson, described the three teenagers as inseparable, the three amigos, Barbara and Jeffrey Kempner, and his grandparents called Anna and Timothy, two peas in a pod. Barbara said she knew those two kids cared about each other in the right way. It was the picture of a successful blended family. Now look, we're looking at the story going, clearly that was not how the dynamic really was, but is that what they believed? And I'm not, and some people are going to be upset by this. I'm going to go, they certainly knew. And yeah, there probably are elements that they did know about, but it's not uncommon for parents to brush children's disagreements as they may view them. And obviously it's more than that. But if you're not invested enough in the lives of your children and you're just kind of seeing the surface level, it may have appeared that, well, you know, they got some animosity here or there. They don't get along all the time, but that's what everybody does. Then they go to their own experience. Like, yeah, I had, you know, arguments with my brothers and sisters too, but we're fine. We got through it. Da, 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 da. Yeah. Not everyone does. Not everyone's you. And looking everything through the prism to which you lived or how you survived, it's not a really great way of looking at others' situations, ever. Ever. Use that as your own guiding light going through life for your own decisions. But when you have to evaluate others and you have to evaluate their situation, you have to do an honest, thorough look at what the hell those dynamics are. Not what you remember from your buddies and friends and sisters and brothers and stepsisters and brothers and your own damn childhood. They are not you. You are not them. It's a very different world. It's a very different place. It's a very different set of dynamics. I don't know what their reasoning was, but I felt like I needed to say that because that's something that we naturally do as humans. And it's a flaw, and it leads to not making great choices. On the other side of this, the people on the outside looking in, Anna's maternal aunt, Crystal Wright, told the Daily Mail that the family dynamic had been fractured long before the vacation, that Anna felt increasingly uncomfortable in her own home, that Anna didn't want to go on the trip specifically because her stepbrother would be there. Wright alleged that Timothy resented Anna, that in his mind, she was the one who'd ruined his life, whether because of his parents' divorce or the loss of stability and attention in the household. Kids have all sorts of different ways of expressing the grief and anger and frustration that comes along with the separation and divorce of two parents. And it may not always be rooted in actual reality. A lot of times it is rooted in emotion, and it's very misguided, and it's a cognitive distortion in many cases, one that needs some working through. So whatever the reasoning may be, right or wrong, kids are going to have feelings. And again, if these things are not dealt with, if you don't listen to the damn kids, if you have a young girl, especially, that is telling you, I do not feel safe in a room with two teenage boys, one that already has a track record of trying to do very, and this is putting it lightly, inappropriate things with her. Probably not a great idea to put them in the same stateroom. But again, a lot of parents do this. La, 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 la. It's great. It's too expensive to buy another room. La, la. And I don't know what happened here, but this is how it works. It'll be fine. We'll give her a choice. She could go stay somewhere else. Do you like being the person that's inconveniencing others? We gave her the option, yeah. Again, do the right thing the first time. And they're probably saying that to themselves. They don't need a podcaster telling them that. Again, this is more so, I think, for anybody else out there in this similar situation before anything of this nature has taken place, because I can guarantee there are gazillions of families out there that are like, oh God, we're going on a cruise and we kind of got a dynamic like this going on that's like odd. Yeah, do the right thing. Wright said she'd learn Anna was sharing a room with Timothy on the ship and could see her niece not comfortable with it, but I guess putting up with it. She said Anna figured she only had to sleep there at night. The rest of the time she could avoid him. And then there's the ex-boyfriend, too, who said he witnessed Anna's stepbrother allegedly trying to get on top of her during a late-night FaceTime call while she was falling asleep. That's not a one-time sibling squabble. If true, that's a pattern, and it's a pattern that takes on a very different meaning now. The legal process moved quietly for months. Then on February 2nd of 2026, Timothy Hudson was charged as a juvenile by federal information. The case then was sealed on February 6th. He appeared at the James Lawrence King Federal Justice Building in Miami. Cap pulled low, camouflage hoodie, flanked by his attorney. Sealed hearing. He was released to a guardian afterwards. Christopher Kempner and his father was reportedly furious that the teenager walked free. The family then issued a statement. The loss of our daughter is a pain that we will never fully heal. She was taken from us in a violent and senseless way, and our family has been permanently changed. Our grief is overwhelming, and our absence is felt in every part of our lives. For weeks after that February hearing, the charges stayed under seal. The public knew Timothy Hudson had appeared in court. They didn't know what he'd been charged with. Then, here on April 10th, 2026, a U.S. magistrate judge ordered the case transferred from juvenile to adult court. That decision cracked the seal wide open. And then April 13th, the Department of Justice made it official. Timothy Hudson, now named publicly, indicted by a federal grand jury as an adult. The charge is first-degree murder, aggravated S abuse. The case is being prosecuted by Assistant Attorney Lopez, overseen by the U.S. District Judge Beth Bloom, under case number 26CR20031 in the Southern District of Florida. Let's go back to November. Go back to what we were told. Multiple sources, including Kapner's grandparents, citing what the FBI told them, reported there was no indication of any assault of that nature. That was the understanding the public operated under for months. In an altercation, a possible fight, a terrible thing that happened between teenagers. Well, whatever the FBI uncovered during its investigation through forensic evidence, through autopsy findings, through digital evidence or witness testimony, fundamentally changed that picture. The grand jury didn't allege a fight that went sideways, didn't allege a moment of rage or an incident. The indictment alleges Timothy Hudson violently assaulted and intentionally then offed his 18-year-old stepsister while their family slept across the hall in a cruise ship in international waters. This is no longer a case about a teenager who allegedly lost control. The federal government is alleging predatory violence against a girl who, according to her own aunt, was afraid of the person in the next bed. It kind of recontextualizes everything. Anna didn't want to go on the trip. She was uncomfortable with the boy. Her ex-boyfriend allegedly watched the stepbrother try to get on top of her through a phone screen. Her 14-year-old brother heard the attack through a wall and couldn't stop it. Her aunt said the family dynamic had been broken for a long time, and the adults in the house called them best friends. The three amigos, peas in a pod. There's also allegations that have been made in court, too, about the chokehold. And that's sort of a hold being used by Anna's dad. Not on Anna, but on a stepbrother who didn't want to go and spend time with them. Interesting how sometimes an adult can demonstrate a behavior and then a child picks it up, if that's what took place. I also find it somewhat interesting in this case that the family is being as cooperative as they appear to be, at least publicly, calling for justice. I'd call for an investigation into the family as well, in my opinion. I'd be taking a real close look at what the hell's going on there. Why? Because that chokehold testimony bothers me a lot. That you have one child in court testifying that the father put him in a chokehold when he didn't want to go and spend time with the family. If that's true, again, that's if. That's the testimony, that's court testimony. It's not been, you know, litigated. That's the accusations of one person, so take it for what it's worth. But if you have someone making an accusation like that, again, there's other kids involved here. There's other people being cared for by these very same adults. That environment needs a closer look. Not saying that you're going to find anything, but you'd be remiss not to look closer. And maybe they already have. But I think it's an interesting possible contributor to the situation environment. What was Anna enduring that the adults either didn't see or choose to frame as normal sibling life? Some of the big questions here. U.S. Attorney Jason A. Redding released a statement. Our hearts go out to the victim's family during this unimaginable loss. A federal grand jury has returned an indictment charging serious offenses that allegedly occurred on board a vessel in international waters. We will present the evidence in court and pursue this case with professionalism and care. As in every case, the defendant is presumed innocent unless and until proven guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. Christopher Kempner spoke with NBC News saying, quote, he needs to be arrested at this time. He is now an adult and he needs to be arrested. That is where this family stands. Justice needs to be served. Meanwhile, in a parallel courtroom, a custody battle that first blew this case open continues. Thomas Hudson, Timothy's biological father, has been fighting for sole custody of his 9-year-old daughter, arguing she shouldn't be living in a household connected to these allegations. I wouldn't say that's a crazy assumption to make. His emergency petition stated that it is not in the best interest of the child to live with her stepfather, where her brother has been accused of murdering the daughter of her stepfather. The family court wreckage from this case is still spreading. Anna Kempner was weeks from walking across a stage and picking up her high school diploma. She had plans, the Navy, law enforcement, a life she was building with the kind of energy that made everyone around her feel more alive. She was one of those types of people. She went on a family cruise. She was put in a room with someone she reportedly feared, and she never came home. Again, if there's anything to take from it, it's everything we talked about. Her 14-year-old brother heard it happening through the walls, allegedly. Her ex-boyfriend made allegations warning the family. Her aunt told anyone who would listen that the girl was uncomfortable, and the adults in that house told the world they were all one big happy family. And they may believe that. I'm not saying they didn't genuinely believe that. It's called a cognitive distortion. It's shit we tell ourselves when we really want to believe something that's not true. A federal grand jury has now named what allegedly happened in that stateroom, but the hardest question isn't what happened behind that closed door. It's how many people had a chance to keep Anna safe and didn't. Again, your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. I don't know what needs to be done here. I don't know that there, you know, charges need to go beyond who's already been charged, because I feel like the guilt and the shame and all that are probably weighing down heavily on every person involved in this case and the poor decision making that was done. I mean, at the end of the day, did anybody sit here and go, yes, let's intend to have this happen other than the person who did it? No. Is there a penalty to the ignorance of ignoring the red flags? I mean, there should be, but I don't know that there's any worse penalty than losing your daughter and trying to live with that, knowing that your decision-making could have prevented it. At least possibly. I don't know. Again, give me your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'll continue with there. Press subscribe wherever you're listening to podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeart. We're everywhere. Search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi and hit subscribe. We do greatly appreciate that. Until next time, my name is Tony Bruschi. We will talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Drake.
For months, everything about the criminal case and Anna Kempner's death was sealed. Juvenile proceedings, closed courtrooms, no public charges. The family was left waiting. That just changed. A federal grand jury has indicted the stepbrother as an adult on charges of first-degree murder and aggravated abuse. And what this indictment alleges is very different from what the public was told in the early days of the investigation. Joining us to discuss, Bob Mata, defense attorney, host of the podcast Defense Diaries, available wherever you get podcasts, and Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. Let's start here. This is a case we talked about quite a bit last year. Then it kind of just went silent because he's juvenile, and then everything sealed. So there really was no information. And we were going to kind of operate of, we're not going to know much more about this if it stays in juvenile court. It's not staying in juvenile court. It's now going to adult court. He's being charged as an adult. And we've now learned that it wasn't just asphyxiation. There was SA alleged that took place in that room on that Carnival Horizon ship between the 16-year-old stepbrother and Anna Kempner. Let me ask you this. I mean, obviously, this changes the whole dynamic of everything that's going on here. You got cameras showing one person going in and out of that room. You got the other brother that's saying he heard noises. We only got one person in there. I mean, unless this guy's Batman or somebody's flying in and out of portholes, it's pretty dead to rights. Where does this case even take off from, or does it? Do you see this end up being a plea deal, or do you think something like this? Do you think they're going to fight it? Do you think they're going to try and plead not guilty on something like this?
No, I think he's going to plead out.
Yeah, you think so?
Yeah, he's not Diddy. You know, you just don't go to trial in federal cases. You don't play with the U.S. Attorney's Office. When they come with their case, their shit is on lock. I mean, their conviction rate is 98, you know? So I think that he'll plead out.
How do you think they got it up to charging him as adult at 16?
I mean, I think that they put it out there where there was enough there for everybody to feel comfortable that it would, because the judge looked at it, right?
Right.
And it's not a rubber stamp, but you know, the judge at some point had to agree that it was serious enough to take a teenager out of that juvenile system. And, you know, it's ultimately the judge makes the call. And that, and, you know, and he made a finding, or she made a finding. They examined the, you know, the nature of the offense, the circumstances, and whatever the sealed juvenile proceedings revealed about his background, his mental state, and prior conduct. Like, they're going to look at all of it, you know, because it's like they're going to be more thorough in the federal system than they will be in the state typically.
Right. And is that what took so long to do this? Because that's the other question I had too, is like, what took so long to get it moved up? All right.
I think so. Oh, and also just putting the case together to put in front of the grand jury.
Go ahead, Robin.
No, I had nothing, Tony. Go ahead.
When you have a case like this, is there like a lever that gets pulled at a certain point? And we've talked about this before, about the importance of not always charging every, you know, teenager that's, you know, of a certain age, 13, 14, 15, 16 and above as an adult, because you are still a youth. But there are certainly times where it is certainly appropriate. Is there ever a lever that is just there where it's like, okay, you killed somebody and you essayed them? That's pretty adult behavior. You know, it's murderous, monstrous behavior, but it's not typically the behavior that a child is necessarily capable of. When you get the essay mixed in there with the murder itself, I mean, is that where it's like, yeah, you're going to be charged as an adult now because you're capable of doing that?
100%. No. You know, because the judge ultimately concluded that this, simply because of all the things you just talked about, was not a case where juvenile intervention was going to adequately address what had happened.
Yeah.
Like, you know, because it's a whole different system, the juvenile system. You know, I mean, under the juvenile system, in theory, he can walk out when he hits 18 or 20, 21. You know, I mean, it's a whole different thing. So, and that's a meaningful signal for a couple of reasons. First, it means that the judge really reviewed the underlying record, you know, and found that the offenses were serious enough in the defendant's profile sufficiently warranted that he be tried as an adult. You know, I mean, that's big. And I more than most probably appreciate that. Like, my wife and I are always of the mindset, we hate when children are tried as adults, no matter how horrific the crime is, because we're just not talking about a fully formed mind.
You know,
that cortex is not fully formed. I don't give a shit what anybody says. That's science. You know, that's just a reality. And it's like
24. Yep.
Exactly. And we have that pull, that internal pull. But the acts were so horrible. We have to hold this person accountable for it. So all to say that if they're going to charge juveniles as adults, which they will, and they will continue to do so into the future, I appreciate when they put this much work into it. And I'm telling you, they put this much work into it. In terms of it getting bumped up to the, you know, to adult court, is really a two-part thing. And it goes back to what we were talking about initially. And Robin knows better than anybody. When the feds are building a case, you know, they're incredibly deliberate in what they're doing.
Yeah.
And they are making a case that is, for all intents and purposes, bulletproof. You know, I mean, that's why everybody pleads in federal court, because when the AUSA steps to you and are like, this is what we got, bro, you know, and then they put the heat on you right away. So it's like you almost start working on your sentencing, your sentencing, like, immediately, because the sentencing guidelines in terms of federal court are vastly different than that in which you find in state court. And those sentencing memos are really become a trial in and of themselves because they're that thorough, because you've got so many factors and there's points that are assigned or deducted based on various things. And a lot of that has to do because the feds have the ability to put the squeeze on defendants and their attorneys by saying, look, you know, you're going to have a pretty hefty deduction if your client's not going to work with us. You know, like we need him to work with us, and we also need him to take responsibility. You know, it's like those are words that are actually, and you get credit for that. So in terms of whatever you're going to end up on with this plea, and I'm not going to bet my life on it, but I go 95% secure this thing's going to plead out.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that actually, and a lot of people are commenting in the comment section on this too. So, and we've seen this in other recent cases with school shootings. What do you think the liability on the parents are going to be on this? You think they're going to go after them next?
Nah, different set of circumstances. And unless we can, unless it comes out that there was some kind of long running issue in that house that they're aware of and they were simply ignoring it, and they ignore it to the extent where they put this kid in a room with her on a boat, knowing.
But that's what it looks like. Again, that's just what some of the hearsay was saying. Like the ex-boyfriend of the girl was saying that the creepy things that the brother was doing. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if they're going to have continue to dig deep on that and do anything with that, just because. I mean,
because of those school shootings, they have the ability to do so now. And when I say the ability, they've always had it. But once prosecutors started creating that precedent and sacking up, because it's a big risk in terms of being a prosecutor, because it's a tough case. And, you know, prosecutors will tell you, every one of them, I'm not trying to bring a case that I'm destined to lose. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? We want to have the evidence. And in those cases, it's iffy because you have your evidence problems, but you also have public perception.
You know, and wouldn't it be interesting, not interesting, tragically so, you know, I'm just, so I know we're covering so much of the IBLP and the FL, you know, the fundamental
FLDS,
FLDS, you know, stuff where parents are overseeing children of theirs that are doing abhorrent things against their own children and others, and, you know, potential liability there. So we're seeing some potential cross here, you know, at that federal level where, you know, you have cults that are actually grooming people to do this. And then you have this situation over here. I wonder, again, it's just because we're covering these things that my mind starts working, seeing if there's any connection between the two that they might bring
up. It's always going back to the cults, man. He's
cult to me, man. I'm cult whisperers right now.
It's a fascinating thing. I mean, there's elements, you know, almost you could go back to the Asa story too, of, okay, you know, what were you aware of? And I mean, if you're looking at the parents and, you know, hindsight's 20/20 on something like this, horribly so, unfortunately. And the toll was losing your daughter. I mean, one could look back and go, yeah, there were warning signs, you know, at the end of the day, most parents are not going to go to the extreme of your daughter's going to be essayed and murdered by your stepson. Yeah. You know, they go, well, it might be kind of uncomfortable. And they're not thinking how extreme this could go, because people don't tend to go there usually. And they're thinking, well, you know, they can tough it out. They're kids. They're just going to sleep there. They're going to be out on the cruise ship all day. And this is probably how they were thinking, right or wrong. This is probably as simple as it was going. And they offered her, and I'm not saying that this was the right crawl either, but they said, this has been their argument the whole time. Well, we offered her, she could go stay with her grandparents. She could go stay in this room over here. Yes, then she would also have to raise her hand and inconvenience other people too in her mind and stay in a place that she really wasn't originally planned to be. This is where it just, the parenting needs to stand up in situations like this. And I get, you know, you try to save a buck. You're going to try and do this as economically as you can so you can go on this trip. Excuse me. But if you got an 18-year-old, a 17-year-old young woman, and you're thinking of putting her in a room with 16-year-old boys that already have a history of not appropriate interaction or attempted interaction with her, you got to get another room or don't go on the damn cruise. Don't put it on her to make that choice of all go sleep with grandma and grandpa, because mom and dad couldn't make a responsible choice here. And I'm not blaming them. I'm not saying it was criminal. You look at it, like I said, and go back and go, gosh, we should have done that differently. And maybe this is a lesson to be learned for other folks going on cruises who are in a blended family situation where there's some weird dynamics with some of the kids or uncomfortable. Sometimes you got to do these sort of things to prevent something far worse from happening. She's dead. That's how we're hearing about her. I have a striking fear that there are far more cases like this where it ain't death that's in question. It's an essay that never gets reported and never talked about again. And I think that happens quite frequently. And for this exact same reason of, well, let's save a buck and kids will be kids. And in reality, these are young adults. These are young little monsters that make poor decisions.
Yes, without question. And who is the whose son is it? Is it the dad's or the mom?
It's the new wife's son. So they recently got married. It's the stepson, so it's a step sibling to Anna.
Yeah. So in that type of situation, I want to kind of go back to Robin's question because it really kind of got me thinking. I hadn't thought about that aspect of it, but you know, those cases where they are trying to and are bringing charges against the parents, it always boils down to knowledge.
Yeah.
Knew or should have known. And it would be interesting to see. I mean, yes, we have the boyfriend story, but did that story make it from daughter to dad? You know, is she like this kid's like a super creep? You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah, what's the context? Yeah.
But like, even it has to have made it back to the parents. They have to have knowledge of it taking place.
Say there's, Bob, so is this enough? So say there's text messages. Say there's, maybe not even to the parents, but say the daughter who was horrifically murdered and assaulted was sending text messages. Because I think, it's been a while. I think there was her expressing concerns. I mean, girls express concerns to friends about seeing situations. If they pull up text messages of her vocalizing, at least even through texting to friends or maybe even family members, her concerns and issues, is that enough to make it an issue for the parents?
I don't think so. Unless the parents are made aware of it, you know, but if she's made an outcry, so to speak, to any kind of mandatory reporter, creates an issue for that mandatory reporter if they didn't report it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's right. Yeah.
That's a different issue. It'll be interesting to see, man. And how long were they married?
Not long. I mean, there was still a custody. I don't have the exact date, but I believe it was like less than a year. It was recent. Yeah. It was like a celebration like type cruise of, you know, one more question on this.
The stepdad's off the hook because the stepdad's not going to know. You know, they like the stepdad knows this kid for 16 years. He barely knows the kid from a hole in the ground at that point, you know, and the mom, that's potentially a different story. You know, well, I'm sure the feds are digging into what the mom knew.
Yeah.
Well, that
was all part of the stuff that they were looking at.
Yeah.
Deciding whether or not to try him as an adult.
True.
So into that stuff.
That's all been examined, I'm sure. Yeah. And if appropriate charges would be appropriate, then I would think that they'd be made or are coming very quickly, if at all. One more question on this. I know you think it's going to get pled out, and it probably will be. Does he have a leg to stand on in anywhere with he was on the ADHD meds? And again, for anybody who's like, I'm on HD, but yeah, so am I. And I know it doesn't make you a killer. I'm not saying it does. I'm saying how people litigate things. The ADHD meds, didn't take his insomnia medication. I don't know what that medication was. Some of those can have, you know, anytime you stop taking a med of any sort, that can cause some like not great behavior sometimes. And that alcohol might have been involved, and he's a minor. We don't know that alcohol was involved as a fact. Does that give him a leg to stand on in terms of any sort of defense of not being responsible for these choices?
I mean, it could potentially, they could put forth a diminished capacity type defense, but I'm just here to tell you in federal court, the scope of that is extremely limited.
Yeah.
You know, it's not as broad as it is in state court. So, I mean, they can introduce, the evidence of a mental disease if he has one. They can also show, because I think I had seen something like he hadn't taken his his ADHD meds for a couple of days, you know, introduce the alcohol. But at the end of the day, it's never going to walk him out in terms of not guilty. You know, it's not going to get there. So ultimately, I just think that that's a non-starter.
I saw the comment there, and it'll end up in one of the disclaimers where may cause you to essay and murder your stepsister. That'll be read very quickly at the end of a commercial. You know, may cause drowsiness, may cause you to murder your stepsister. Just bear, like, did I just hear that right?
Yeah.
Did it just say it may cause you to murder your stepsister? That's a new one.
I mean, when they throw suicidal ideation in there, and Robin will tell you, I mean, it's looked at is the same as homicidal ideation.
You never hear that in the ads, though. You never hear homicide may cause you to murder.
Actually, you do. Not murder, but I hear suicidal ideation. That's
and taking a life is taking a life. It doesn't necessarily discriminate about, because remember, a lot of suicides are homicide suicides.
Right.
Exactly. Nobody wants to take the med that may cause homicidal ideation. Like, people are good with the first one, but the second one, it's like, that's a bridge too far.
Tony, I really want to get rid of that foot fungus, man. So, you know,
the fungus is gone.
Massive cost. You know, you might wipe out your entire family, but by God, your foot fungus will be gone.
Thank goodness.
Now that incessant scratching and itching's gone. That's all that really matters.
Ask your doctor if fungicide is right for you. All right. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in and give us your thoughts. Check out Bob's Cop Podcast, Defense Diaries, wherever you get podcasts. And Buried, it is also available wherever you get podcasts. It's a deep dive into the John Wayne Gacy story, like only Bob can tell it, because only Bob has the tapes. So it's quite a podcast. Do check both of those out. Robin's book, It's Not All About Me, available wherever books are sold. Go check this out. It's delicious, and it is bursting with country fresh flavor. I just want to say that again.
Next one is going to be It's All About Bob.
It's part of this complete breakfast, by the way. All right. Until next time, for Bob, for Todd, for Robin, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers Podcast.